and welcome to today's Raging Bull podcast. We occasionally like to add guest interviews from traders and experts from Raging Bull's Elite Traders Chat Room. In the Raging Bull Elite Chat Room, we hold live trading sessions with Raging Bull's traders, elite members, and our invited guests. These sessions are hosted by our Elite Chat Room host, Hitha Herzog. It's my pleasure now to introduce Hitha and one of our special guests to the Raging Bull podcast.
Hey, Elite Room, I'm back again with my good friend, Ankur Jain. Hey, Ankur. Right. Ankur is the CEO of Kairos, and I want to thank you so much for being in here.
Oh, it's good to be here. Bright and early again.
Bright and early. As you know, Elite Room, you were watching our morning segment the other day. Ankur came in as part of my special guest. We have a new segment called How I Did This on that morning show that we're going to start rolling out. Ankur was the first guest on that segment. And then I wanted to bring him in here for us here at the Elite Room, just to have like a more one-on-one conversation with him. As I said, he's the CEO of Kairos, but Ankur is more like, if I may, I mean, you started out as a child wonderkind. I mean, you have been tech investing since basically you were age 5. and that was 10 years ago. No, I'm just kidding. But Ankur has been doing this for a very, very long time. He has bought and sold many companies. He has been on the helm of tech innovation, really, as tech innovation ramped up in the last 25 to 30 years. Ankur isn't that old, by the way. I don't want to pin an age on him, but he's quite young to be so successful in the world and everything that he's doing. But Ankur, you know, we were talking about an Elite as well. We had to do this week that was, and we were talking about how NASDAQ just continues to rip up. Someone had mentioned that NASDAQ almost feels like a safe haven with stocks. And what is it about now, especially, that everyone is gravitating towards technology and tech innovation?
Yeah. Well, look, I think you and I talked about this a little bit on the last morning call. I think it's important to distinguish between the FANG big tech and kind of the rest of technology, right? And I think one of the realities of today's world is, you know, short of antitrust action, the big five, the FANG tech companies, aren't really going anywhere. I mean, if anything, as the world moves further and further into this kind of digital era, we're going to see, I mean, the market share of Google is only continuing to grow. The market share of Apple is only continuing to grow. It used to be a world, I mean, even when I started my career, I mean, 10 years ago, the whole business model in the Valley used to be new startups were here to disrupt the incumbents, right? The best business model was, hey, we're a better Alta Vista, if you remember them. We're a better Yahoo, right? And that was how you created the next billion-dollar companies. The difference is now, tech is a mature sector, right? We have our big industry incumbents, and it's not easy to replicate. And the truth is that the next wave of innovation that we're seeing, largely driven by things like, say, artificial intelligence, those aren't a startup game anymore, right? I mean, you can have the smartest people in the world. You can raise all the money in the world. But if you don't have the data that Google has, it doesn't do much for you, right? And so, I like to make the comparison of kind of that software side of tech a little bit to pharma, right? Where the startup world has actually become like an R&D lab, but really your only exits now are back to the big companies. So if you want to bet on kind of long-term growth of technology from a traditional software standpoint, it's hard to find somewhere more applicable than the FANG stocks, right? And I think over the next 10 years, you're only going to see things like AI eat more and more of the traditional world, right? So I think that's why you're seeing in a world where there's so much uncertainty, such low interest rates, why people keep piling on to the FANG stocks. On the flip side, I think the carryover into other technology areas like the lemonades we talked about earlier this week as well, I think that is a dangerous game. And that is where you start to see kind of the 99-2000 bubble of dot-com companies.
Yeah, and I had mentioned when we talked earlier this week, like I remember, I mean, this is many, many years ago, but I was part of that first wave of the tech bubble when I was working at Bear Stearns. you know, I was working on pitch books for companies like DrCoop.com and The Globe. Do you remember all of this? And the fact that you mentioned Alta Vista is so funny. I mean, it sort of throws back to how long Encore has been doing this for very, very long time. And you're absolutely right. You know, it seems like, especially with companies, you know, as you mentioned, Lemonade. But then when you look at companies like Tesla, for example, and I know, you know, I said this earlier today, if there was an MVP stock for the week, it would be Tesla.
Yeah.
They're going to be reporting out earnings in pretty shortly, I think in the next week or two. And, you know, if they report out, you know, some, even just a little bit of profitability, they're going to be considered part of the S&P 500. Yeah. But you see what that stock is trading at right now. What is motivating investors, and what's the motivation behind putting so much money behind a company that just basically, you know, for the most part has no revenue? I mean, you know, we're seeing Coca-Cola like too.
This is where I think it's like, it's so important to remember the fundamentals of what makes technology, technology, right? And I actually, there's two separate things. Why do I think Tesla has the potential to be big versus why I think investors are making the decision today may not be the same. The truth is Tesla to me is more of a long game. And in the short term, all the excitement over the growth, the market share, the reach to profitability almost doesn't matter because people will catch up to that, right? People will catch up to the design, the battery technology, the efficiency technology, all of that. But if you really want to make a long-term bet, and you believe that in any capacity, the winner is going to be the people that have the networks of cars that people can access when you enter some sort of self-driving type world. I mean, if you think about it, Uber pretty much left the self-driving game, right? After Travis left that business, they've essentially pulled back, right? Since that happened, Google has essentially stalled on their Waymo efforts. They still pour a bunch of money in it, but in terms of progress, it's essentially stalled. So really the only player in the market who's actively generating the kind of testing and learning data around self-driving vehicles is Tesla. And I know that seems like a far, far out vision, but think about it. I don't know if anybody here has used a Tesla recently. I mean, you can turn on the autopilot and it's shockingly and a little scarily good, right? Yeah. And at the end of the day, these types of algorithms only really work from real world constant data collection, right? And I just don't know. Again, you think about Google, we talked about it. It's not that they're a search engine. It's that they have billions and billions and billions of data points a minute that they're collecting, right? And that becomes a competitive moat that makes them so valuable over the next 10, 20 years. Most car companies don't have that. It's just, you know, as my dad used to say, all cars are plastic, metal, carbon fiber, but it's really how you put it together that makes a Honda versus a Ferrari. Don't forget, technology gets technology multiples, right? Because the marginal cost drops over time with software. I think we get the risk here is that I'm seeing a lot of just crazy money flowing into anything that is considered tech, right? But everything is tech these days, right? Just because you're a D2C brand selling some consumer product doesn't really make you that different than the retailer, you know, 10 years ago, right? And I think it's easy to get swept up in that. We saw that in the dot-com, but we saw that in the early 2010s. Like, it's just, that is the danger here. And so when you're thinking about these stocks like Tesla, I would just keep pressing to say, where is that kind of network effect being created, that kind of moat around the data, the moat around the software that can't be beat once it's established, right? And then if you can bet on that, I mean, then the returns become pretty outstanding over the next 10, 20 years.
I want to open up the floor to, obviously, Elite Room, chime in with any questions you have for Encore. He is probably the smartest person I know when it comes to tech investing. I mean, he is an investor himself. He's helmed multiple companies, including Tinder. I have a question about Tinder, by the way. Don't let me not forget. I have to ask.
I mean, by the way, that's another one. And I can tell you, like, obviously, having formally run the product for Tinder, I'm a little surprised, as happy as I am to see it, at the stock price that Match Group has today. I mean, that's an example of a business where, as exciting as it is to see the growth, I think people have to go back and ask, like, what is the fundamental stickiness of dating app products, right? And that's one of the challenges that we always have to think about, which is, like, scale is not necessarily your friend on a dating app, right? Not necessarily having many, many, many more options to sift through can actually be a negative in that world. And yet, you're seeing people plow money into that stock right now in a way that doesn't necessarily correlate with the long-term growth there. So it'll be interesting to see kind of where that plays out, but it's definitely a surprise to me.
Now, I have to admit, I never went on dating apps. I think I missed that whole wave because I met my husband right around 2009 when people were talking about this new app called Tinder, and it was so crazy. You just swipe on the picture and you get matched up with someone. So I missed that whole thing. Yep. And I would often joke with Seth that we should just go on Tinder and see if we got matched up together.
I can't believe I didn't send this to you back in the day. We had a feature that I launched on April Fool's, which was you could invite your married friends to swipe for you, because the number one feature request we used to get was, I missed the boat. Please, please, please let me play on your Tinder. And if anybody asked, it was you that I was talking to about this. But we had an invite swipe, a married friend swipe for your single friends feature. And it was a hit.
I am so upset I miss that, because I do that with all of my friends. I just think it's so fun. I mean, I completely missed the boat on Tinder and that whole wave of dating app. But to your point, I mean, it's hard to scale. I mean, you don't want to see a dating app scale, but at the same time, as this rise of COVID happens, people are sheltering in. I'm seeing kind of commercials for Match, other people are doing Zoom, I guess, interactions. How do the metrics change? You know, since we're talking about technology, how do then the metrics change when you're thinking about, and again, I know you're not at Tinder anymore, but Tinder or, you know, and I'm going to bring it back to Kairos, you know, when you're looking at healthcare data, with the rise of COVID, how do your metrics, you know, just do you have to just completely relook at your metrics that you've used for so long?
Yeah.
Do you just add to it now, or what is that? What do you do then? Right?
So one of the things that might be surprising is that even prior to COVID, a lot of the activity on the dating apps, don't forget, for, you know, people are swiping on Tinder up to 100 profiles on average a day, right? And so a lot of the activity wasn't ever really even about meeting up in person necessarily, right?
Ankur, I'm going to stop you. 100 profiles a day on Tinder? This is all news. My mind is like, you can see 100 people a day on Tinder?
Yeah, I mean, that's the average number of swipes you would see from the user per day.
Was, people could do more.
Yeah. I mean, people... the crazy thing is that's just Tinder. The average user has 2 to 3 dating apps on their phone. People are really just cranking through it again. But the challenge is that even prior to COVID, a lot of it was actually just the gamification of it and the ability to have chats with people and meeting up. While that was a key moment when people came in to kind of keep them on the app, that first date you have, the second date you have, the third date you have, a lot of the day-to-day usage was just matching with people and chatting with them. And especially when you're bored at home, right? It's a great, fun way to meet people. So the usage actually, from my understanding, isn't dropping at all. If anything's growing a little bit. Again, the challenge is just, as I think about the stock for these types of dating apps, there really never has been a dating app that has lasted for a long time at the scale that they reach at their peak, right? It's very much like, it's like the nightlife world. Whatever the next bar is, you know, you can have a restaurant that lasts, but generally there's always a new thing. And so Match's strategy historically, the Match Group, has been to just keep acquiring these businesses, right? And so Hinge is their latest acquisition, as you might know. And that's kind of the new Tinder now, like the anti-Tinder Tinder, right? But it's all the same company. And so the real thing you're betting on is, do you bet on Match continuing to buy these businesses or incubate them? But that just, that's a hard thing to value at such a high multiple.
Oof, I can't. That's right. I think I see the advertisements when I used to ride the subway 4 months ago. The advertisement of Hinges was so great. We don't want you to use this app. Like, the mission is to not use this app. Which
it was
is
the app designed to be deleted or something like that, right?
Yes.
But, so brilliant. But again, don't forget, like, Match.com, Match Group is kind of like the Procter & Gamble of dating apps. It's like whether you pick the Tide detergent or the All detergent, they're all the same thing. And so it's just an interesting business.
It's great. But, you know, it's really interesting too. Speaking of that, you know, if it's the Procter & Gamble of dating apps, I got to tell you, Procter & Gamble really gets in it with you with the scent of Tide. And, you know, they really want longevity for that. We've been using Tide in this house, in my house at least. You know, I don't want to date myself for a couple decades now because I grew up with it. So maybe Match just wants you to do that. You know, you met your husband. You're going to meet your second husband on all time or all, what is it called? Yeah.
There's every possible version of things you can imagine. It was shocking to me. I mean, you have Christian singles meet J-Swipe, you know, blackpeoplemeet.com, match.com, Tinder, OK. I mean, but it really is just for different kinds of people and at different stages of your life. And I think that was kind of their approach to kind of keeping that market. And so anyways, it's a fascinating world. But I just think going back to the technology question, I think it is super important as investors are thinking about how to put their money anywhere right now outside of these zero interest bonds, outside of essentially a market that has so much uncertainty, to just be specific on what type of technology you're betting on, because not all tech is created equal, even right. though people love to apply tech multiples as one bucket, which I think is a bubble risk.
Yeah, that is that. And it sounds like a bubble risk. We have a lot of questions for you, Ankur. I've been sort of not looking at chat. Now I'm looking at it. This one from Tiffany. Where does Ankur see the next big disintermediation taking place and the up and coming companies that might have big impact? Banking and crypto?
Yeah, so I'm not a big crypto guy. And I think it's really important to understand why, because people get very, very touchy about that topic, right? Yeah. So if you think about the blockchain, which is what kind of the foundation of all these cryptocurrencies are, it's a new type of evolution to what I would consider like the cloud computing evolution was to the kind of server-based world, right? And if you think about it, cloud was never the application in and of itself, right? It was just another way to store data to provide a service, right? And so that distinction is important when you think about the evolution of blockchain, right? It makes much more sense for governments to eventually adopt a blockchain foundation to manage the financial system than it does for a third-party currency to suddenly work. And I hear everyone's arguments about, well, we don't trust the government. This is safe. This is independent. But the truth is it's not. There's still controls built in. It's still somebody who sets up the rules of the currency and can change the rules of the currency. And unlike everything else, currency may not be backed by gold anymore, in my opinion, but it still is backed by the requirement that you can accept it anywhere in the country, right? So if you believe in the country's economy, it's very hard not to. So we'll see what happens. I think there's a lot of exciting applications for the monetary system from blockchain, including the transfer of money across borders, all of that. But I'm not personally as bullish on crypto. What I am very bullish on, though, and a lot of what I'm working on now with Kairos, technology at its best over the last 20 years has been, how do we increase the quality of a service and democratize access, right? When you think about things like Uber, it was that it increased the quality rather than calling a dispatch for a taxi, not knowing where are they going to show up, in 30 minutes, an hour, if ever, once you get in, how do you pay? They yell at you, it's cash only. So they increased the quality, but then democratized access, right? So the person who could never afford to have a private driver can now press a button and have a car show up as if it was a private driver, right? And as a result of that, the industry started to consolidate, and what was once a highly fragmented but massive transportation industry started to consolidate around two or three players. By the way, you saw the same thing even with Google. We forget about this, but search, prior to that, you would go to libraries, you would buy books, you'd have to like go to the Britannica encyclopedia to find information. You'd have to watch the news. I mean, it was a whole different world, but they improved the quality of accessing information and democratized access. And so as I think about the next big disruption, you know, you look at industries that are hyper fragmented, that where the quality has gotten so bad that customers are demanding disruption, right? And ideally you can do that in a way that democratizes access. So ideally making it affordable and accessible. Right now, especially as we're seeing highlighted in COVID, I mean, the majority of people's incomes today are not going to discretionary spend. It's not investing in stocks. It's not investing in crypto. It's not buying new gadgets. It's just going to cover housing costs and student loans and healthcare. I mean, it's scary, but 90% of all income for most millennials is just going to basic needs.
Right.
So when you talk about follow the money, right? The money is today in housing and healthcare and student loans and these sectors. It's just that nobody has figured out how to consolidate that in a way that makes it a difference. And so I believe the next big kind of Uber Facebook style opportunity really is going to be in who can figure out how to make take a market like housing, which is literally the biggest players are lucky if they have like, you know, 100,000 apartments out of 43 million, right? And can you create a service that kind of taps into that entire world? So 3 years ago, Kairos is a parent company. We have five products, all focused on exactly this thesis, right? How do we make housing more affordable? How do we make healthcare more affordable? And in the process, kind of consolidate that market. We looked at really, really simple stuff, right? The best tech, Tinder was a very simple idea.
Right.
Kind of, you know, the best tech ideas are the ones that you hear and you wonder, how has no one done this before, right?
Right.
And, you know, we looked at renting, and anybody here who's ever rented before knows that moving in is just the smallest part of the pain. They take every dollar you've ever made just to let you in the damn apartment. It's like first month's rent, last month's rent, $3,000 security deposit, right?
Yeah. Encore, that is if you have great credit and you are like an optimal renter. I mean, and exactly. God help you if you don't have a credit score that's like not in the, you know, the 700s or high 600s. So
I mean, look,
there's that aspect too.
Just talking about capital sitting on the sidelines, in the United States alone, there's $45 billion of cash locked up in security deposits that sit in escrow accounts that landlords can't touch by law, tenants can't touch by law. So that's just dead capital sitting on the sidelines. We said, this was literally insurance. When you rent a car, you don't pay $5 a day for the car and then $10,000 in cash in case you get into an accident, you have insurance. So we launched that with Kairos under a product called Rhino. When you move into an apartment, instead of paying a $1,000 security deposit, you pay $5 a month and we insure your landlord for that risk and you get to save that money. So we're putting back $45 billion into the economy. Last year alone, we put back over $100 million into renters' pockets. Right. So like that kind of innovation is, I think, what people should be looking out for, where it is scalable and you do have those network effects and you can consolidate the single largest spend category for consumers into one, two or three brands.
One, two or three brands.
I know we're running out of time here. So, but
yeah, I was just going to say, I think I'm literally, if there was a rap sign from the control room, that's what I'm getting right now. And there's so many questions for you, Encore. I think we're going to have you come back, to be totally honest. There's just so many questions for you. Encore Jane, CEO of Kairos, thank you so much for being in here with us. Let's do part two. I don't know what you're up to next week, but maybe we have you back in here and we can address some of these questions that everyone has. You're amazing. Thank you so much for being here with me, my friend.
Good to see you. Bye.
Well, that's a wrap for this episode. Thanks for listening. I invite you to visit RagingBull.com/podcast. That's RagingBull.com/podcast. To discover more episodes, to learn more about people who have created, built, and lived successful lives. Also remember to subscribe to one of Raging Bull's newsletters. Join me on the next episode as we share more stories from our guests on the wisdom behind wealth and how they built their own success. Raging Bull Podcast is brought to you by RagingBull.com, helping traders succeed through education, resources, and where you can watch real traders make trades. Raging Bull, learn to trade. We'll show you how.